Roaring into the Oakland airport, she brings to a triumphant finish her 2,400-mile hop from Hawaii after 18 hours in the air.
Chris Williamson is a man who knows a lot about Amelia Earhart. He first learned about her during a history project in grade 3.
That sort of started my unofficial involvement with Amelia Earhart. I did that History Day project. I didn't want it to end. I remember going back a year later in the fourth grade and doing another one. And, you know, I just kept doing them every year all the way up to high school when I started writing papers on her and the ideas became more complex. And I wrote a dissertation on her in college and I just kind of kept going. So she's really always been part of my life. She's always sort of been on that horizon ever since I was a little kid.
He's even moved to her birthplace. And for more than 13 years, he and his wife have run Chasing Earhart, a podcast and documentary series dedicated to her life and her legacy. And that involves exploring the theories of what happened to Earhart, her navigator Fred Noonan, and her Lockheed Electra 10E when they took off from Leh in 1937 in an attempt to become the first to fly around the world.
So the facts of the case are these. So they were in Leh, New Guinea. Okay, so they were three quarters of the way around the world. So they had started out on the morning of July the 2nd, 1937. They took off from Leh, New Guinea, that roughly three quarters of the way through their equatorial world flight. So at this point in the trip, they're 22,000 miles in with just over 7,000 miles to go to get to California. And standing in the way of California and them is 2,556 miles of ocean from Leh, New Guinea to Howland Island. And this was to be their final refueling point before returning to Hawaii.
The flight was rough. There were strong headwinds and the radio communications were poor.
As they near Howland, it's believed that the Electra was down to her last 97 gallons of fuel, roughly. That's debated, but that's as close as we can get to official capacity. There's a Coast Guard cutter, Itasca. That's a small ship that lies in wait off the coast of Howland Island, and it's there to help guide Amelia and Noonan in once they come into sight. And it's believed that all's well because the signal strength readings from the Electra, they keep getting stronger and stronger as she apparently gets closer and closer to the Itasca. There's a gentleman on the boat. He's the last person to actually speak to Earhart alive. His name is Leo Bellarts. He was the chief radio man on the Itasca. And he testifies to the fact that he thought she was so close that he stepped outside the radio booth to look for her plane. He thought he would see it. He thought he would hear it. I mean, he just thought they were right on top of them.
But they never did make it to Howland Island.
July 7th, 5 days later, USS Colorado begins to search the waters to the southeast of Howland. The Lexington arrives on the scene soon after from its base in San Diego to join the party. They all kept searching until around July 18th, and to this day, neither Amelia Earhart, Fred Noonan, or their plane have ever been found.
What happened after that has been debated for more than 80 years.
There are five main theories to what happened. The first theory is what I just explained to you. It's the official representation of the United States government. It's what they stand behind to this day. She simply ran out of fuel, fell short of her destination of Howland Island, and the plane lies 18,000 feet down, and it's in relatively good shape, depending on who you listen to. The second theory, and one of the more prominent ones out there, is known as Japanese capture.
Famous aviatrix Amelia Earhart was beginning a program of air research that ended with her mysterious disappearance in the Pacific. A theory has always been that she wandered off course and landed near Truk, where the Japanese had secret military installations. She may have been executed.
The theory goes that Noonan and Earhart were captured by the Japanese and ended up on Saipan. And that's where different people believe different things. Some think they died or were executed there, but others believe in something called the Irene Bolam hypothesis.
The Irene Bolam hypothesis states that she does make it off of Saipan and she does return. After being in Japanese captivity for some time, Amelia Earhart's liberated and she's repatriated back to the United States. And some people believe that it was done in secret with the help of FDR, with the help of Jackie Cochran, who was her dear friend and who founded the WASP program. There's also some information, some stuff that we've uncovered that we haven't really fleshed out yet, but there's also rumor and innuendo that Howard Hughes was actually involved financing her repatriation. She was declared dead in absentia in 1939, on January 5th, 1939. So because of that, she was all intents and purposes dead. Amelia Earhart assumed the identity of Irene Bolam, and she lived out her remaining days on the east coast of the United States, and she never flew again.
There's also the castaway theory, that the duo landed on another island called Niki Mororo and lived out the rest of their lives there. And then there's the theory that underscores the Blue Angel Project, the belief that they turned back towards PNG and crashed off the coast of Bougainville.
The idea there is, after realizing that they weren't going to make their intended destination of Howland Island, Amelia Earhart and Fred Newton made the executive decision to turn back and head for the nearest available runway, which was in turn Buka Island. And they encountered a storm, and after lightning struck their aircraft, according to a witness, a little kid that was on the island at the time, they crash landed off the shores of Buka Island, and the plane now rests there to this day in less than 100 feet of clear blue Pacific. And of course, that's an ongoing investigation.
Each theory, says Williamson, has its own evidence. Irene Bolam knew an incredible amount about planes, despite never having flown in her life. Some claim to have found bones on Niki Mororo that don't belong to Pacific Islanders, and others have produced photographs that appear to show Earhart on Saipan after the crash. But the Blue Angel Project are the only ones who have already got a plane wreck to work with.
I think somebody has cracked this case. And I think it's a matter of really at this point, when, you know, just a matter of when. I think whether Bill Snavely is onto something in Buka is very, very possible. This is the only man that's ever had time, distance and fuel all correct. And he's the only man in 80 plus years that actually has an aircraft, which is pretty incredible. And the aircraft happens to be in 100 feet of water, and it happens to share some consistencies with the plane that she flew. Granted, there was a handful of planes that were very similar to the L-10E, but it happens to be consistent. And it's an aircraft, and it's an aircraft site that's been screaming at people to investigate it for many, many years. And that's what they're finally getting to do, which is really remarkable. He may be onto something. He may actually have cracked this thing.
But Chris Williamson also says that in a way, it doesn't matter if the mystery is ever solved.
Maybe it doesn't matter what happened to Amelia Earhart. Maybe it doesn't matter who finds her. Maybe it doesn't matter what the ending is. Maybe it doesn't matter how she died. Maybe it only matters how she lived. And that's what's the most important thing to talk about. And I think that's one of the things that we've really been pushing for with Chasing Earhart, is this woman's impact and this woman's legacy.
It's much easier to fly the Atlantic Ocean now than it was a few years ago. I expect to be able to do it in my lifetime again.
In 1935, this is a woman that went to Purdue University and was talking about STEM. She was talking about STEM before STEM was ever even a thing, before it was ever even dreamed up. She was telling women, you can be engineers, you can be scientists, you can be aviators, you can be mathematicians, you can do what you want to do. This is a woman that could stop and bend down and tell a little, you know, 10-year-old girl at the time, you can be anybody you want to be. Go out there and do what you want. And that 10-year-old girl would grow up to be an engineer and work at NASA. What's really interesting about this case, it's like a double-edged sword, because you've got this woman who lived for 39 years and was this worldwide famous explorer and was this incredible and passionate aviatrix who did all these things and broke all these rules and broke all these records and just was the face of aviation. And then she just disappears into thin air.